If you are watching this on YouTube or listening to this podcast, wherever you are today, please hit that subscribe button, that follow button, so that you can stay current on the material that we are providing. But not only that, you then help us to spread the word to more people. You are vital in this mission to reaching our world of people just like you who are living in this nightmare. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson. Welcome to the Covert Narcissism Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Swanson, and I am back today with Eleanor Marks. Eleanor, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. It's good to be back here.
Good to have you back. I'm really, really glad that you're here. And let's kind of, you know, how's your week been? How are you doing?
I'm not going to lie. I had a rough week. I had a rough week for myself, as well as a bunch of clients had some pretty crunchy times this week. And so I've been eating their feelings for myself, which got a lot of us talking about our comfort foods and had me wondering, Renee, yes. What is your comfort food? What's your turn to vice?
My comfort food. Now, that's an interesting question, because honestly, when my stress level goes up, I don't eat. I go the opposite direction and I'm like, food? Are you kidding me? And so, so I actually really struggle with that. That's been ongoing through most of my life. But let's see, what do I really do turn to? I will absolutely turn to a good protein shake and load it up with some good fruits and veggies, because it's the only thing I could get in my stomach. But when my stomach finally does settle down, it's pizza.
Oh. Your protein shake is just one step away from a kale salad, though.
I know. I get it, but it is something that I do tell people, that look, when your stomach just won't tolerate anything, maybe a protein shake would at least get you something inside of you for sustenance.
Yeah, but something good.
But pizza definitely is my go-to then when my stomach finally gets back on speaking terms with me.
What's on your pizza?
Oh, what's on my pizza? Anything from, let's see, just a basic pepperoni pizza, but no, I like to put some spice on there. So we're going to add some, you know, banana peppers and some Italian sausage.
Oh, you know, nice.
Onions for sure. So how about you? What's your comfort food?
I'll fully admit my divorce was sponsored by McDonald's and Starbucks. McDonald's French fries. Oh, that can make any day go better. And chai teas at Starbucks.
Okay.
Are my go-to comfort. Okay. A hug in a cup is what we call those chai teas, a little hug in a cup.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, all right, let's get into our questions. You've got a question, I think, that you were going to start with today.
Yeah, I have one from Tanya. I wish we knew where she was so we could say Tanya from Colorado Springs, but we can't, just Tanya. She asks, I'm in my second marriage and married almost 2 years. I'm realizing he's a covert narcissist. I'm mad at myself because I didn't think I'd find myself here again. And now learning so much on codependency.
All right. Hang on a second right there. Let me stop, because I know this question goes on. It is so incredibly common to find yourself in a cycle of one narcissistic relationship to another. You know, it's not unusual at all. So I do want to let Tanya know, look, be gracious with yourself on that. I hear her saying, I'm so mad at myself that I find myself here again. You know what? I have heard people 3 and 4 and 5 relationships deep that it's narcissist after narcissist after narcissist. Until you really get on a healing journey, that's a repeated cycle.
You want to believe the best in everybody and what they tell you. And you want to just grab onto those words that they say and the love bombing and
absolutely. And they can paint a beautiful picture. We all know that they are so capable of painting that picture.
Yes. Tanya goes on that she's on a roller coaster. I've caught him in so many lies. I don't know why I try to get him to admit it when I know it's consistent lies. I'm feeling so much in my chest and it's building. He does nice things for me. And when I don't show appreciation adequately, he gets weird. Like I don't show it correctly. I can't define this ache in my chest, but it's building like a scream that can't come out. I know I need to leave, but I'm frozen. How do I move forward?
Wow. That's a loaded question. And I love the phrase like a scream that can't come out. I really resonate with that, because it's like you're stuck in this, this frozen state, like you're just encased in ice and you can't move. You can't, your voice doesn't even work anymore. You can't scream. You can't let it out. But your insides, I've called it before in my podcast, you're like a grenade inside a tank. That grenade is so full of powerful energy waiting to explode, but the tank is so solid on the outside that the explosion would only happen inside the tank and do all this destruction.
Yeah. I think for this idea of getting like this scream out or like everything that's just building physically, talk therapy. Because I find so many people who are afraid to divulge what's going on behind closed doors. They don't even tell their best friends or family. So even if it's talk therapy with a therapist, a friend or anybody, trying to get it out that way is definitely an option. I'm a big fan of body works, kind of like moving energy out, which also is accompanied with talk therapy. And I know you've said it a couple of times, Renee, of just like exercise. Find Absolutely. A punching bag, get it out, beat something up, throw a plate, whatever, in a safe place.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the rage room. I love that concept of, you know, I get destructive for a little bit, but do it safely. You know, I did that with a cardboard box and a snow globe that he had given me. But I even put the safety glasses on, you know, to make sure I was being safe. But I went to town on that snow globe with a hammer. And, oh, man, did that ever help to get some of that stuck energy out? Because the energy does get stuck when we're in that fight or flight mode and all we end up doing is freezing. Well, it's not just our outwards that freeze. It's our inwards that freeze, too. And so we can get ourselves kind of moving, like we can function. We can get the kids, you know, lunches made, send them off to school. We can even maybe get a shower. We can go to work and we can go through the motions of life, but that scream still isn't getting out. And so we're frozen on the inside.
The heaviness. Mm-hmm. I think the other part too, in Tanya's question is how do I move forward? When I was thinking about this, I'm like, oh, like a little accountability buddy, somebody that's going to hold you accountable of, okay, keep moving. Did you do this? Did you, whatever it might be, call that attorney, just file those papers. And then it kind of hit me that, well, shoot, I just described what a high conflict divorce coach can do.
Right. I was just thinking that same thing with the group coaching, the accountability that comes between, you know, you've got now 6 to 10 people who are in your back, you know, in your corner, and they're there cheering you on, but they're there eager to hear how did, you know, did you make progress and to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah. And in those support groups, I mean, I grabbed a accountability buddy from the first one and, hey, did you go for a walk today? You know, and just someone to harass you, to get you out that door to like, go do it. And but I have it rough and we're in this together. So let's go for a walk together. It comes off a lot easier for somebody who's going through it with you than your good friend who's in a really amazing marriage trying to tell you to go for a walk or do your exercise. It's
not the same.
It doesn't land the same.
No, it's not the same. So, and I will add to this that when you start finding grace for yourself, you know, we all get frustrated, even though for me, it wasn't a repeated relationship with a narcissist. I was still like, how did I not see this sooner? How did I not find a better way to handle it? How did I not? You know, all these things I should have done, or I should have seen it sooner, or I should have been able to protect my kids. And that adds to the heaviness when we're kind of trapped underneath not only the judgments of our partner, but now the self-judgment that comes in. And so I guess I would say that in moving forward for me, a large part was I had to find some grace with myself. I had to recognize, look, I didn't see what I didn't see. I had to quit blaming myself for his stuff. Okay. That was part of it, is I got to quit blaming myself for, you know, that he doesn't have a relationship with his kids, that, that he's even gaming all the time. I blamed myself for a lot of his issues. And so I had to quit doing that, but I had to, in order to go forward, I had to quit blaming myself. I had to start finding some forgiveness for me. Forgiveness is for us. It's not for anybody else out there around us. We really, truly have to start with that forgiveness that's for ourselves.
Yeah. Nicely said. Very nicely said.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
That is a tough one. And I will say, like I've said it before, every day, just do the next right thing. One step.
Yes.
Whether that be to call an attorney, whether that be to go for a walk, whether that be to beat up a snow globe in the driveway, or whether that be to have a conversation with your child. Like, do whatever is the next single right thing.
Yes. Yeah. I like that plan.
So we have a question from Melinda. And it's a lengthy question as well. And I love the thought out questions that we're getting. Like, just these are, you know, a lot of material in them for sure. She says, kind of along the same lines at the very beginning here, how do you keep your resolve? I've made steps towards leaving, working with a therapist, saving money, looking for a new place to live, and even consulting an attorney. The attorney's advice was that if you want to keep your rights to the property, don't leave it. Instead, ask the other person how ending the relationship is going to look with the house, child custody, etc. first. And in keeping with this legal advice, she says, I told him a couple of weeks ago that I wanted to separate and asked what dealing with the house or agreeing on child custody would look like. I want to stop there for just a second. There's something in here jumping out at me. So the attorney has advised that you go to the other person. So you're going to the covert narcissist and asking them how ending the relationship is going to look. What's your thought on that? What's your immediate reaction to that?
I never want to go against like what an attorney is suggesting here. And that is great advice for two people who can cooperate and make progress and move this along further. But as we all have learned, this is not the individual that we are paired up with. And having conversations are just stepping again into the boxing arena and, you know, circular conversation, word salad, call it whatever you want. It's going to spin around on you. I would tweak let's take what the attorney said, but maybe phrasing it in an email, something where you can keep a safe distance so you don't have that long, drawn out, you're not even sure what was said.
You walk away with your head spinning. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, go ahead.
A simple email. What would be your first draft on how you want this to look? What can you suggest? What are you looking for? And leave it at that.
Yeah. It gives you a little bit of a buffer between you and them standing face to face with each other. So I'm wondering how this turned out. So we'll go on. And she says, we argued for several hours. Yeah, right. Oh. There it is. And I'm sorry, Melinda, I'm sorry in that situation. I would say that it is easy to fall back on, but I want to be able to talk to them face to face. I want to be able to have a good conversation. I want them to be able to be a responsible adult. It's so easy to fall back into that again and again. I know I did. Surely I can talk to him. Surely we can have this conversation. But I would say this, that if you are going to take that approach, and every approach is different, like every situation is different, you have to do what's right in your heart. And I feel in her question that she was following her heart of wanting to have a good conversation, you know, with her husband, but have a boundary around that, where if it's yet again another circular conversation, that you walk away. That yeah. Being stuck in an argument for several hours, and if this is the way this is going to be handled, then I'm going to take the space for me. Yeah. Protect yourself from those circular arguments.
Those verbal conversations, if anybody can see my air quotes with that, you know, turn, they don't even really hold up later of, you know, well, I didn't say that. And, you know, or, you, but you said that. No, I didn't. Like.
So it doesn't matter anyways.
Yeah. Go straight to email. Yeah. Here it is. On this date, you type this out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all going to disappear in thin air, and you're going to walk away from the arguments that your head is spinning so much. You don't remember, you know, where you were or where you landed. You remember things that were said because you remember how they hurt your heart. But those are the things that are going to disappear later anyways, like into thin air. So, yeah. So then she goes on that, so she says, we argued for several hours, and then he backed down and essentially changed the subject. Not surprised. And she even puts in parentheses, not the first time this tactic has been used. Since then, things are going okay, more peaceful. And he is acknowledging when he's doing some things that perpetuate arguments between us, and he's backing off. And yet I find I don't care and still want out. Is this time of peace a ruse? Another manipulation? How did you stick to your plans once you made them? And the covert narcissist started, and she puts in quotes, behaving, for lack of a better word.
Isn't it? You get to the point, you make your decision, you're going to leave. And then your biggest fear is that they're going to start behaving again, because you know the cycle. And
yes, yes. And there's this weird place of normal that you can't exist with them, that you can just kind of let it. It's again, like what I was saying earlier about going through the motions. You just start going through the motions of life. And it's this weird place of, I don't call it peacefulness. It is. It's kind of a stuck peacefulness, like just waiting. It's like the eye of the storm, waiting for the edge of the storm to come back. But it's an okay place to exist for some period of time. Like you really can maintain it for quite a while. And then you end up more stuck. Like it just makes it worse.
Yeah. And when he's acknowledging that some things perpetuate arguments, right? That acknowledgement, like, you hold on to that hope. Well, oh, he sees it now. Or she, right? This goes back and forth.
Yes.
But because you want that so much. You don't want to have to go through the leaving part. Just want to grab onto that, no matter how flimsy it is or how many times you've seen it or heard it.
Yeah.
You want to hang on to it.
Yeah. Mm. I would ask, you know, on that line, how did you stick to your plans once you made them? And the covert narcissist started behaving. You know, I don't want a relationship where this person has to behave. That's almost like keeping that parent-child dynamic in place. And, you know, we're talking about full-grown adults here. They don't need to learn how to behave. They need to grow up and take some accountability and mature and develop. And so when I hear the word behave, you know, I think of students in school that are earning green stickers for their behavior. And that's not what I want in a healthy relationship. That's not a healthy relationship. You know, one of the things my husband used to come to me and say, you know, am I in trouble? And I'm like, and I would turn and look at him and go, you know, it really bothers me when you ask that, because you're not a child. You're not, I'm not the parent and you're the child. And so just come talk to me, come ask, you know, hey, are you mad at me that, you know, what happened here? And we can talk, but let's do it on an adult level. And this behaving concept keeps it as a parent child, like dynamic.
Yeah. That was nicely put again. I like that new view of behaving and if they're behaving. The question part of like, how do you keep your resolve? How do you keep moving forward? We've all been there, right? Like our minds start to play tricks on us. Was it that bad? Can I stay for a little bit longer till this happens, that happens, this date? But I think something that might keep pushing you forward is if you start reflecting and looking at tangible things, journals. And your journals don't have to be, you know, fancy. It could be bullet points. It could just be stuff you jotted down, a list of incidences that, oh yeah, oh, I remember that too. And I think, right, we all kind of say that our mind is the fog that's in there. And I look at my list every now and then. I'm like, oh my God, how could I have forgotten about that? And it really puts it in front of you instead of the mind trying to like, oh, you really want to stay, don't you? Just stay. It'd be so much easier.
Right.
That will keep things. And writing like a note to yourself, how bad you feel at this point, like, you know, whether it's a pep talk to yourself so you can go back and read it when you start to waver, should I go, shouldn't I go? You can see it in your own handwriting.
Absolutely.
A little more concrete.
Absolutely. And if you don't have that, if you haven't been journaling, you know, throughout this relationship, another place where people are finding some just confirmation that this has been a repeated behavior or repeated cycle is, you know, text messages that you've sent to your best friends. Go back and look through some of your old texting, that anything that has to do with the relationship. And, you know, I had another lady who I've worked with who she didn't have any of that, no journaling, no, but in her mind, she had managed to erase all of the cycles of this behavior that had been going on. And then when she was in a current round of it, she was thinking, well, you know, it's never been this bad. Like, this is really bad. And it's never been quite this bad. She called a couple of old friends. I mean, her marriage is 24 years. So she called a friend from like 20 years ago. So they're 4 years into the marriage. And she's on the phone talking with that friend. And the friend goes, don't you remember? Don't you? And the friend starts pointing out, do you remember when this happened? Do you remember when that happened? Do you remember the argument? Do you remember what you said? And then it happened not only with that friend, there was another friend that was 15 years ago, another friend that was 10. Like, she ended up talking to these friends and then she just went, this has been going on all of my marriage. But she kept erasing it. Every time another moment of peace, those peaceful moments that happen, she would just erase all of the memory, you know, from the background.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at your photos and your phone too of, you know, oh, well, there's another vacation he wasn't at, or, you know, stormed out of that dinner and that's why he's not in that photo, or, oh, there he is in that photo as we're all cringing. Right. It's there.
Oh yeah.
You just got to be willing to look at it.
It is. It is. And when she asked, you know, is this time of peace a ruse? I would say it depends on what you want out of it. If all you want is a few days of peace, it might be that. You might get that, you know, even a couple of weeks of peace, you might get that. But if you're looking for, you know, a lifetime of peace, a marriage that's focused around peace and centered around peace, you need to really consider the patterns that have been playing out in your background. Well, Eleanor, thank you for joining me again today. I really, truly appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah. And I want to go ahead and put a little tag in here. Tell our audience again, remind them how they can find you.
Great. So I have a website that has all sorts of good information and you can contact me directly from there. The website is pretty simple. I like to think eleanormarks.net. So it's eleanormarks.net.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that here. And everyone out there listening, I just wish you so much peace, you know, on this journey. And I know I say that, I say it many times, I say it after every single episode, but please know that it does sincerely come from the bottom of my heart that I wish you and your kids so much peace on this journey of healing. You have been listening to the Covert Narcissism Podcast with your host, Renee Swanson. Be sure to check out our website at www.covertnarcissism.com. There you will find many resources just for you to help you on this journey. You can also reach out to me by email at Renee, R-E-N-E-E, at cnglifecoaching.com. Those letters are CNG as in Covert Narcissism Group. I do look forward to hearing from you. I wish you so much peace on your journey of healing. The information provided by Renee Swanson and the Covert Narcissism Podcast is for educational purposes only and is not to be used for diagnosis purposes and not intended to be a substitute for clinical care. Please consult a healthcare provider for guidance specific to your case. This material discusses narcissism in general. It does not claim that any specific person has narcissism and should not be used to refer to any specific person as having narcissism. Permission is not granted to link to or repost this material to support an allegation or a claim that any specific person is a narcissist. That would be an unauthorized misuse of the material and information provided.